Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Ron and Don Show. I'm Don Allen in Studio 1. Over Studio 2 is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, good to be back. How are you, sir?
Oh, it's good to have you back, Don. I know for a couple of programs, I know you're still doing your academic thing. But the world goes on. All kinds of things happening. Say, why don't you kind of repeat for our listening audience some of that breaking news that you have. Boy, that breaking news syndrome is really big in America now. But why don't you kind of break that out to us?
Yeah. Okay, as you know already that the Pillsbury United Communities, their executive director or their president, Sandra Smith-Baker, has went to the Minneapolis Foundation as the vice president over there under R.T. Ryback. And Pillsbury United Communities has named Adair Mosley as the interim director or president. But what's happening in the communities, we're hearing sources are telling us, Mr. Edwards, that the Urban League's Mr. Belton, Steve Belton, is trying to get in there and get that position, and that's why he's been seen on a couple of media outlets in protesting, especially with the Philandro Castile case.
He was on, he was on our Almanac, which is a very popular program on PBS.
And a couple other things, trying to position himself. And in the meantime, in the Batcave, you know, you have a couple of our flagship agencies that are really upset that they're not getting funded the way that they should be. And the Council for Minnesotans of African Heritage, formerly the Council on Black Minnesotans, is just totally falling apart. On last Monday, they terminated the agreement or the employment of one Dr. Lewis Porter. And I guess Mr. Jeffrey Hassan is one of the names that have been popping up as the new executive director and a couple
Jeffrey
other
Hassan
folks.
Jeffrey Hassan of the African American Leadership Group. Is that right? Wow.
Yes. And so, I mean, I just to say, Mr. Edwards, that this legislative session, we got absolutely zilch. Zero. Nada.
Wow.
Nothing.
Wow.
And you don't hear anybody saying anything about this. It's just hush-hush, business as usual. And if you do say something about it, you're attacking or you're being toxic, as usual. You know, and this has been going on for years. It's the same old, same old.
Well, this is for our international and domestic and local audiences, what Mr. Allen is breaking here. It appears that Steve Belton will be moving on from the Urban League of Minneapolis to Pillsbury United, I assume, and possibly Jeffrey Hassan, currently with the African American Leadership Summit, will be taking over the former Council on Black Minnesotans. So we've got movement, no doubt about it. People are securing their, I guess they're securing their pensions, right?
That's what they're trying to do. That's what they're trying to do. Just go ahead and log, you know, do the thing and try to get in there and, you know, secure themselves. Because I don't know about you, Mr. Edwards, but I've been hearing some stuff about the Urban League. The Urban League has now housed some teacher testing sites from Pearson in the basement in the lower level. When, you know, Pearson plays good rent. And the only two real, you know, offices in the Urban League that are doing well are, I guess, are Keith Ellison's office and the Pearson's testing office in the lower level. You know, that's for teacher testing, the MTLE, Miss Low Teacher's Licensing Exam.
I was in there yesterday. I was in there yesterday for a meeting. In fact, I was in there twice. Once for a very sensitive meeting, politically and emotionally, spiritually, and then I was there for a mayoral debate. We're here in our city. We are having our elected officials, our 13-member city council, and our mayor, and some lesser positions are up for re-election, if you will, and so. I was there, and I did see some new offices operational, but they were basically training kinds of programs. I guess that helps to keep the rent going and keep the lights on in the water, right?
Yep, exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's about it. And they've become, if we take you back in time, Mr. Edwards, to maybe 2008 when the African American Men's Project was launched by then Hennepin County Commissioner Mark Stingley. And
yes,
it was
yes.
supposed to do all this great stuff in Minneapolis for, you know, young men 18 to 21. Well, that turned mm-hmm. into being a referral agency where you'd go there, expect help. They'd send you to the Urban League, and then the Urban League would send you to Sabathia. Sabathia would send you to Hennepin County. Hennepin County would send you back to the Urban League, and you just went around in circles. Now if you go to the Urban League, well, there was a time at the Urban League, if a guy came off the street and said, hey, I got a job, I need a bus token, you'd get one right at the front desk. No questions asked.
Yep, yep. Mm-hmm.
And now, I mean, there's literally nothing. I actually went online, Mr. Edwards, to the Urban League website, and it has all these resources and links. I clicked them, and it stayed on the same page at every link I clicked. Every link.
Oh, my. Oh, my God.
And I said, oh, you know, when you were running the agency, you know, there's over 200 people.
Chairman
of the board, yes. And you were running, you had two schools. You had over 200 people gainfully employed, getting raises. And, you know, and it contributed to the community. If there was a problem in the community, they would call and ask for you, Mr. Edwards, and they would ask for the Urban League representation,
mm-hmm.
and that problem was dealt mm-hmm. with. Now you don't even
mm-hmm.
have we have nothing. We have zero. So
yeah, we used to have
bad.
A time when we would take on many issues both locally and nationally. We were in the forefront of the collective buying campaign against General Mills, which was a massive movement, if you will, really put the Urban League and my good friend Vernon Jordan on the activist list, if you will. And so, yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah. But I guess, you know, things have changed. People told me many years ago we don't want that 1960s style activism and militancy and et cetera. So, hey, I don't know. But also,
yeah.
I have to point out that last night, man, there was a revelation, which kind of goes to the heart of what we've kind of been talking about the first 5-6 minutes of this program.
Yeah.
A mayoral candidate, African-American by the name of Alfred Flowers, who this is his second time running. He did pretty good 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Flowers wrote a story that actually had I've never really seen this, that had the audience actually in tears with regards to the story of some events that have taken place, the loss of lives, if you will, suicide of a 15-year-old child and things like that. And some people had asked me last night, you know, why this information wasn't out there, and I said, well, I don't know. But if it had not been for Mr. Flowers bringing it to the attention of the panel, and by the way, sitting on the candidates panel was the mayor, who, by the way, I noticed the Star Tribune, who also had this story, as I understand it, but that the mayor of our city, Betsy Hodges, actually apologized to the family and to the mother of the deceased 15-year-old after her suicide in regards to being our, interviewed and questioned as pertains to a homicide that took place on the late evening of the 13th of June. I understand some people have been saying that something happened 2 weeks ago. Why are we talking about it now? Well, interesting enough, Mr. Allen, one of the things that's so tragic about what has happened here is that both of the deceased, the 15-year-old child who unfortunately committed suicide, which I'm quite sure a lot of people out there know about and talk about it, and the gunshot victim, shot through the head and shot dead along the 2600 block of Logan and Knox, if you will, have still not been buried.
Oh, no.
Yeah, they're now going on to
both
13, day 14, and have still not been buried. But I have to say that a very courageous action by the MPD in this regard, in a communique to Estes's Funeral Home, the only African-American funeral home in Minneapolis, and one of only two in the entire state. Well, but we shouldn't talk about that, should we? Have indicated that the funeral will be paid for. And in St. Paul, the only funeral home there, Brooks Funeral Home, which has been in business for 80 years. Miss Brooks, who is one of the most outstanding morticians in the United States, has actually overlooked $1,400 in fees so that the funeral can go ahead for the 15-year-old child. And so we do have some good and decent people, and I just think it's important that we talk about that and we make sure that the community, those that are interested, you know, are aware of it. But if it had not been for Mr. Flowers challenging the mayoral candidates, including the current incumbent sitting mayor, I don't know if we'd be having any discussion about this. I really don't know.
Wow, that's very interesting.
And let's get that phone that's number, just... because we don't want anybody to say that we're saying things, and because the white media and others have not addressed it, that, you know, we're just making it up, you know.
Oh, yeah, get that phone number.
That number
is 347-426-3904. 347-426-3904. The phone lines are open. And, Mr. Edwards, you know, it's funny that you say that, because after I posted this to Facebook, I wrote underneath, I said, you know, some of y'all aren't going to believe the show or believe Mr. Edwards or my postings here until you hear it in the white media. But we're just going to let you go ahead and keep cooning. So
I left that message for him. If it had not been for Mr. Flowers first being sought out and beginning dialogue with the family, he then asked me, as a longtime civil rights activist, to join with him in conducting an internal examination. I guess it wouldn't be known. You know, Mr. Flowers speaking to it last night again at a full house at the Urban League of Minneapolis, which was interesting. And, of course, we talking about it here on this worldwide program, the Don and Ron program, if you will. But, again, those phone lines are open. If there's anyone that has any questions, that want to question the authenticity or the integrity of what we are talking about, you know, I and my colleague, Mr. Allen, are very much prepared to answer the questions, if you will, because there's additional information, but I want to see if anybody is going to ask a series of questions or, you know, challenge, again, I use that term, the authenticity of the report that we are making, first brought to our attention by Democratic mayoral candidate Alfred Flowers, if you will. Again, if it had not been for the very emotional revelation by Mr. Flowers last night, again, at the Urban League of Minneapolis. Oh, by the way, the mother of the deceased and the stepfather were there, if you will, stayed for basically the whole program, listened very patiently. Like I said, it was a very emotional moment, Mr. Allen, when the mayor of our city, Betsy Hodges, apologized to the mother for her loss. But based on the expression on the mayor's face, I just don't think that anyone had told her that these tragedies were taking place. Now, there was something written about the homicide, which, by the way, did involve a young 17-year-old Caucasian. That's a story within itself, if you will, and a 15-year-old black child who, after being examined and et cetera, went home and hung herself, you know. And, you know, Don, I thought we had all kinds of programs and et cetera. I listened to Stella West and them up there at North Point, who are talking in terms of the many things that they have to deal with mental health. Everybody talks about mental health, mental health, mental health. And yet here's a child that needed tremendous support, if you will, and et cetera, and looks like just nothing was there for her, you know. I mean, she had been taken into custody. Oh, okay. Hey, cut me off right away. We want to hear from our listening audience. And by the way, we're going an hour tonight, so we're going until 9:30 Central Standard Daylight Time. Caller, go right ahead.
Call you live on the air.
Hello, Mr. Edwards, Mr. Allen.
Yes, sir.
What can we do for you? Yeah, I was listening to you, and I was trying to look this up in the Minneapolis Star Tribune. I guess I missed it or something. Is that this must be a big story there?
Well, you know, I'm somewhat reluctant to talk about all this because the white media has not addressed it, and so that means there's a question of the authenticity of a black journalist. But you have asked the question from outside of Minnesota, sir, and so I'm obligated. You've called before and have raised questions to us. The reason it isn't in the paper is that last Friday, a meeting was arranged with one of only, well, two black reporters they have with the paper here, the Star Tribune, as we refer to it. The reporter met with the mother and stepfather of the 15-year-old. We will not reveal the 15-year-old's full name. We will just indicate and use the initials like the police do, KS is the initials. The reporter went and met with the family at a popular eatery on the north side of Minneapolis, if you will, left with the mother, if you will, and received the information, took it to his editors, and they maintained that it was not a relevant story. It was not relevant. There was no importance that needed to be dealt with, including how long both of the individuals, the young Caucasian 17-year-old who was shot on the evening of the 13th, and the young 15-year-old who committed suicide as an outgrowth of stress, tension, and everything else on the early evening of the 14th. So the paper blocked the story. Maybe it's because of the election and they want to give favorable information to white candidates, because Mr. Flowers, who is black, he's a black candidate who ran 4 years ago, so he's clearly known. There was nothing, sir, in our paper this morning here in the beautiful, Shangri-La of Minneapolis and St. Paul. And so to your question, sir, the general public, as my colleague Mr. Allen said earlier, is devoid of the information and the knowledge. Though clearly, as we speak, there are two young human beings who have been waiting for 14 days to be buried for a variety of different reasons, which I guess we shouldn't talk about. but I hope that helps you with your question about the Minneapolis Star Tribune. They had, again, I repeat, with even greater clarity, that a African-American, one of only two reporters that they got down there, was given the story by the mother of the deceased 15-year-old child. He carried it back. In fact, he tried to get comments and was pushed aside, but he took it to his white editors at the Minneapolis Star Tribune. They said they had no interest in a story like that. It was not anything that was emotionally and spiritually important. Okay.
Oh. Wow. Well, I was just wondering if you could give just a little bit of details of the story, just a little bit of how this all occurred.
It started on a very tragic evening on the 13th when there was an attempted stick-up by what was initially identified as three individuals, and then five individuals, but the Caucasian, the young man, I will indicate that his name is in a court document which was posted by some people who got their hands on it. There was great anger initially in amongst law enforcement that this Caucasian had been shot and killed by, black savages, if you will. But then, during the course of notification of the family, they found out that the stepfather now of the deceased, if you will, was an African American. His mother is biologically white, and it seemed that things got kind of ugly after that. I don't know if people were being punished or whatever it was, if you will. Again, if at a significant level within the Minneapolis Police Department, if they had not stepped in, particularly the head of the homicide unit, I guess I can only say this, that we would still be waiting for a date certain of the internment of the two individuals. In the case of the 15-year-old, who we've given her initials, she was brought in. She was interrogated and examined for about 7 or 8 hours. I will have to tell people that they need to be very careful about different narratives that are going out, because the entire interview is captured on audio and video. And so people who have been giving descriptions of what has happened need to kind of be careful with regards. Now, so that we don't have to waste our time going through this, I was brought in by Mr. Flowers yesterday morning in a meeting at the Urban League of Minneapolis, if you will, about an hour and 45-minute meeting that was very, very emotional. And had a chance to listen to both the mother of the 15-year-old and the uncle of the black stepfather, who, of course, raised this young 17-year-old Caucasian, if you will. And there is an intertwining, sir, that is going on here that is not very pleasant. But again, like I said, if it had not been for the efforts of the commander of the homicide unit, as well as apparently the office of the assistant chief, Assistant Chief Arredondo and Chief Harto, maybe things would not have gotten straightened around. And I am at liberty to indicate that today a special text message was sent to Estes Funeral Home of Minneapolis, which is the only African-American funeral home here in Minneapolis, indicating that they could move ahead post-haste with the funeral, and that all costs and expenses would be paid for. Now, in the case of Ms. Brooks in St. Paul, she has indicated that she will absorb all debt because it has been difficult for a number of reasons to raise the necessary money. Mr. Flowers, by the way, I know yesterday spent a tremendous amount of time meeting with some of the nonprofits. I know Mr. Allen will love this, meeting with some of the nonprofit organizations, primarily on the north side, in an attempt to raise the $1,400 that is still remaining as it pertains to the cost, the expenses to bury the 15-year-old. And I repeat again that both of these human beings have been in the refrigerator. I'm not trying to be funny, because that's where you obviously have to put a corpus delicti. Have been in there now for 14 days.
Wow.
And leadership has been extremely quiet, with the exception, again, of Mr. Flowers, who is running for mayor of the city of Minneapolis, who stood up last night, and I saw him bring the crowd to tears. I mean, including the mayor. And I repeat this again, sir, because maybe we have other calls, but I repeat this again, that the mayor of the city of Minneapolis apologized to the mother, who was the only person there as it pertains to one of the two victims, apologized to the mother in a very emotional expression. Yet, as I said a couple minutes ago, being a little bit redundant, is that the Minneapolis Star Tribune, to the best of my knowledge, I see no newspaper on the stand today that talks about suddenly a mayoral debate in North Minneapolis. Nothing in there, and nothing about the statements and information brought forward by Mr. Flowers. And, of course, on the Ron and Don program tonight, we are making sure that our community and our city knows about this, because it's tragic. it should have never happened. It certainly should never happen again, sir. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I just had one last question. Is this kind of standard operating procedure for the Minneapolis paper there to do this? Because it seems like other papers around the country kind of give short shrift to issues in inner city communities. So is this kind of normal
yes,
behavior
it is,
for them?
Yes, it is. It is the norm. As a journalist, I appreciate that you have asked that question. I'm not going to shy away, and I don't think that my colleague, Mr. Allen, will shy away. Yes, this is the norm. This is the way the communities of color are treated, and the African American and Native American communities are at the bottom of the totem pole.
Oh, wow.
Yes, this
wow.
is this is how our communities are treated. I repeat again, an African American reporter, one of only two with the Star Tribune, got this story, interviewed the mother. In fact, the family thought that maybe the brother was, you know, that term we used to use. I think that you're within that age group that you understand what I'm saying, that the brother was shucking and jiving.
Yeah,
they thought he was shucking and jiving. And he has been told, by the way, as I understand it, that he is not to discuss with the family what the decision was that took place, that he is not to discuss with them, because the question was asked yesterday in a closed meeting if the reporter in question had gotten back to the family and explained why he hadn't written anything, and they said they hadn't heard anything from him and it attempted to reach him, but he was not returning calls.
Oh, wow.
So that's the way we operate up here. Just think up here in Liberal Minnesota.
Okay, well, yeah, that's all I really had. So that's very interesting. I'll listen to the rest of your show off the air then.
All right. Thank you, sir, for calling and asking questions. Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Allen, we went a long time. Do we have any other callers? Anyone want to question us? Are you there? Are you still there, Doc? I think Mr. Allen must be talking to someone in the queue.
Yes, Ms. Hamburg.
Are you talking to anybody
here
now?
Someone called me and told me to go look at the Star and Tribune to see if there was anything in there, and there's zero.
I know. Oh, did people think that we would corrupt our program by indicating something that we already knew wasn't there? Why would they even suggest that to you?
And now there's a picture of Philando Castile, and there's a headline, Kellogg Foundation to give $2 million to St. Paul Foundation to help racism. And I think
that's hilarious. That's a bad
Edward.
Headline. You need to address racism, not help racism. You mean address racism.
we already know that racism
is being helped.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's being helped. That's going to help it more, actually. I was kind of being tongue-in-cheek with that, Mr. Edwards, but the headline's actually Kellogg Foundation to give $2 million to St. Paul Foundation to help fight racism. That's not how you fight racism, trading money to keep foundations open because they're going broke. You know?
Now, is this, by the way, Mr. Allen, my associate here, is this the Kellogg Foundation at Battle Creek, Michigan?
Yes, the W.K. Kellogg Foundation announced Wednesday that's giving $24 million across the country. Yep.
Okay.
That's
Battle Creek Mission.
But there is nothing. I'm searching the headlines, even in other little fringe papers. The biggest thing that's being read is a woman got charged for killing her boyfriend in a video stunt. That's like the most thing read now in the Star Tribune.
Okay. Well, obviously, none of this has to do with a mayoral forum
nothing.
Here in our beloved city last night, in which an African-American, one of two candidates, actually there are three candidates of color. There is a individual of Muslim extraction. I just couldn't understand this morning because I grabbed my paper. By the way, Star Tribune has went up another 50 cents, 50% raise. You know, I didn't know they were in that kind of shape. But I was looking to see how they would address Mr. Flowers, because this is about the third time that he made some statements and there was tremendous applause and et cetera. His name is never mentioned.
Yeah.
You know, even Nakiba Lebe Pounds, the African-American woman, the second African-American who's running in the campaign, at least gets some, you know, quotes. But Mr. Flowers, I just don't know what it is. He gets nothing, I mean, at all. But so we let me be sure I'm clear, because we got, you know, plenty of time, got a half hour. So you received some kind of text message or suggestion that we needed to go read the Minneapolis Star Tribune, as if the story was in there?
Yeah, go ahead and look and see if there's anything on there about the mayoral. And I'm looking St. Paul, Minneapolis. I'm looking everywhere, BBC. And if it would have popped up, I would have got an alert. But there's nothing. It's just everything. Peachy keen and beautiful and sunshiny outside, you know.
Yeah, well, as two journalists, we really need to, and we don't, you know, have any calls coming in. We really need to analyze what happened to the black reporter who a week ago this past Friday met with the mother and stepfather of the 15-year-old victim. And he was told he couldn't write no story, man. So we don't need that kind of stuff. We need to be looking at more positive and mundane kind of things. I mean, maybe you would think that's what, you know, it's what people would want to talk about, but I guess not. But again, those phone lines are open. Mr. Allen, please give the number out. I was thinking that maybe people would have a question. I mean, we don't have 15-year-old black children, you know, committing suicide each and every day in our city after being, you know, in question and interrogated as it pertains to a homicide, and then, you know, no one can explain why this child broke. I would have thought that, you know, she could have been referred to North Point up there, you know, where they say they have all kinds of programs for those that are, you know, being challenged with regards to mental health problems and et cetera. But I guess, I don't know, I guess maybe,
well, you know,
maybe health care.
The thing about North
Point. Go ahead.
Yeah, the thing about North Point that people don't understand is that that's a petri dish of disparities for funding. Because 91% of the people that use North Point are over 150% below the federal poverty line.
Yes.
Okay,
yes,
that means that your funding from the feds, the Hinton County, and everybody else is at the highest level possible. That's like a school having 100% free or reduced lunch.
Yeah,
the money. The money. They're pouring money in there like buckets. But what happens? You have Franz Fanon would say you have the petty bourgeoisie, black elites, most of them part of the DFL, and this is down from the right, running this stuff, and they're having these social cabals rather than helping the people. You know, and like just like the Urban League, you know, the Urban League, and we talked about this many times, Mr. Edwards, and the Urban League actually was created to kind of help the middle-class black folks so they can sustain businesses and hire people from the lower one-third of the community and push forward.
That's correct.
On the black agenda. On the black agenda. And all of a sudden, you know, we're with poor people. Cut businesses out, you know, cut, you know, the productivity of black Minnesota especially out. Now, you go down to Atlanta. I'm going to tell you, Mr. Edwards, you go down to that Urban League in Atlanta, they have training classes going on. They're getting people to entry-level jobs every month. A whole crew goes out and get hired. They have this rotation thing where if you're not working or if you want to work, you come and take these training classes on how to answer a phone, how to use a computer, how to type your resume. Once you pass it, you almost guaranteed a job. And they've been functioning since 2009, since they kicked that off, they have not stopped. And more corporations has opened up to them, taking these people, you know, and treating them like regular employees, benefits, 501, you know, all these things, the IRAs. And we just can't seem to stop begging for nothing here, you know, and it all has to be politically aligned. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to get all soapbox, Mr. Edwards, but this kind of pisses me off when you have two dead kids and, you know,
117, 115 for our worldwide and national audience, 17 and 15.
And we hear nothing from the mainstream newspaper, really, and from our black organizations. Back in the day, a press conference would have been called. People would have, you know, gathered around.
A meeting would have been demanded with the mayor and other representatives of city government. See, there was a state representative and a city council member on that panel with Mr. Flowers, as I understand it. And though I did not see Ray Dean, who is the state representative for the heavily African-American Legislative District 58B, if you will. And then there was our Jacob Fry, who is a council member from the 3rd Councilmatic District. In fact, his campaign director or manager, as I understand it, is State Senator Bobby Joe Champion. Yeah, and that's you know, I understand that, that, you know, certainly Jacob Fry prides himself on understanding, you know, black people probably better than black people understand themselves.
We have to give him a black card, Mr. Edwards. He just had to go
reach out
and give him a black card.
That's right, man. That's right. But again, that phone number, man, because the line is open and we still got, 25 minutes. Because I'm just interested in what the community is thinking when we start seeing this pattern that emerges. And by the way, we've had, again, quite a rush. Maybe we haven't been talking enough about the homicides. Oh, by the way, last night, the first citizen patrols began to patrol on the east side of St. Paul. And the patrols were supposed to begin in North Minneapolis tonight as it grows dark. Now, I'm not sure if that is going to totally happen because there is still some friction amongst some of the groups, if you will. But mm-hmm. The communities of color have decided that they must try to use desperate measures and to try to bring young men and women to the table, particularly in light of the fact that we had a peace summit here, if you will. I understand that a couple of our leaders are going to be taking the peace summits to Jackson, Mississippi, Little Rock, Charlotte, North Carolina, St. Louis. Yeah. So, but I think, you know, you probably want to stay home and take care of home first. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that would probably be the thing to do. That would be the thing.
Yeah.
Right. That's,
yeah. So,
you know, Mr. Edwards, that's what happens to all our things here in Minnesota. They start something just like Black Lives Matter, the Kayma Levy Found, Jason Soul, NAACP. You get somewhere, you get a couple of newspaper headlines, you get some money, and you're off to another city to pull the same thing. They got folks out there that can handle their own business.
Say this. You just mentioned President Jason Soul of the Minneapolis NAACP. I forgot to mention it to the caller that we had who asked a couple of tough questions about paper. Be advised, and this is for those that are listening and et cetera, that one of the things that came out in the private meeting yesterday was that was facilitated by Mr. Flowers, was that the family has retained legal counsel, a Mrs. Washington, who is the attorney for the NAACP of Minneapolis.
Oh, interesting. Oh, that's beautiful.
And so the NAACP of Minneapolis has taken up this particular matter, if you will. And Ms. Washington, who I guess has been an attorney here about 3 years, according to what was said, and I can only talk about limited things as it pertains to the meeting because it was so sensitive and emotional. But, yes, the NAACP of Minneapolis. So we're looking forward to some kind of statement by Jason Soul or whoever the chair of the Public Safety Committee is. You remember how we used to wait on that after the Jamar Clark situation? Jason Soul, you remember, was the chairman of the Public Safety Committee, and Ms. Labby Pounds was the president of the NAACP. Remember, we used to oftentimes asked because we were waiting on a weekly basis for their reports on the Jamar Clark situation. And by the way, we are happy for the family of Mr. Castile, who reached a $3 million settlement with the city of St. Anthony a day before yesterday. $3
million. Wow.
The attorney, by the way, including the judge, Ms. Hatcher, attorney, will take one-third right off the top.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Right away.
Give that number again, Mr. Allen. I'm sorry, I cut you off a couple of times. Give that number again. Phone lines are open.
Yeah, 347-426-3904. Yeah, Mr. Edwards, you know, people just, you know, I've been posting, going back and forth on social media, posting the phone number to people asking tons of questions. I'm saying, hey, the show is on, and I'm ribbing them on. I'm saying, what does the Urban League do? Nothing. What does the NAACP do? Nothing. I'm trying to rib them, you know, and get them going, egg them on, and either they're listening or not calling in, or they just, you know, they have nothing to say. I mean, we have all these Facebook activists, and you try to take them out of the box, and the first thing, like, one asked me, well, what do you do for the community? Nothing. What am I supposed to do for a community? I stay in my lane. I do the news. I do a show every now and then. Write a couple blog posts. I mean, I'm busy, you know, doing other things. I says, you know, I've been through that. We all have been through that circus, that dog and pony show. You know, any minute now, they're going to say they have 2,500 jobs for the black community. You know, that announcement. I'm waiting for that. You know?
You're absolutely correct, sir. Yeah. We are legendary here in the Twin Cities for coming up with that kind of information. I call it fake news. Yeah,
that's what it is. That's what it is. Totally fake news. And so you're sitting here wondering, you know, what's happening, what's going on. Like I said, the phone lines are open. You can call. We'll answer it. It's 347-426-3904. Don't cost you nothing. You got a cell phone or a home phone. Just call. Dial. So,
yeah.
We're sitting here, and there's a little – one thing I'd like to talk about real quick is this Minneapolis City Council and this $15 minimum wage. I believe people should get paid. Don't get me wrong, Mr. Edwards. But if you allow a $15 an hour minimum wage to be the law in Minneapolis, we're going to look like Baltimore, where Freddie Gary was killed, that neighborhood. The buildings are going to be dilapidated. People are going to move out. Businesses are going to move out because the mom-and-pop shops cannot afford to pay $15 an hour. You know, the McDonald's, by example, Seattle. Seattle is losing. They said the average worker is losing $125 a month that do have a job. And they're laying people off left and right. And I'm saying, you know, you want to put the minimum wage to $15. You want to ban plastic bags in stores, especially corner stores, but still you want to it's okay to sell paraphernalia, crack pipes, and Brillo in the stores. What's wrong with this picture? What is wrong? What's wrong with these people? And then I'm looking at the pictures.
By the way, let me just cut in,
Miss
Allen, on this particular point, because we need to play the role of the economist, if you will. You may be getting $15 an hour, but you're not taking home the equivalency of $15 an hour, right? And I think you've been working on the figures as I'm looking over there in studio.
Yeah.
Because when you talk in terms of taxes and et cetera, you maybe take home, what, $1.60?
It's like $7.86.
There it is right there. I saw you working on the computer there.
Yeah.
$7.86. So in other words, almost half of your $15 is gone with regards to taxes and Social Security and et cetera, right? Okay.
Right.
And by the way, federal law, because I know what the millennials like to say, you do not have the statutory authority, legal authority, to insist that you receive the full $15 an hour that you allegedly work for. And by the way, they're going to be cutting back the hours also. Instead of you working six, you'll be working four. Instead of working eight, you'll be working four. But hey, you know, by the way, what number are we looking at with regards to a person that makes $15 an hour? What kind of rent can they afford? Particularly if let's say they're single. We'll just make them single.
Okay, Mr. Edwards, let's do this. Let's do 15. I'm on the calculator. Times, let's just say 35, because they're not going to get 40 hours. 525 a week, okay, times two.
That's not take-home pay, but
that's
what
that's
you
not
get, $525 a week.
This is overall. Yeah, so it's $1,050 a month times 26. There's 26 paydays in a year.
Mm-hmm.
That's $27,000, $2,700 basically, or $27,000, excuse me, $27,000, okay, and some change. So if your rent to get a good apartment, last time I checked, okay, even where I used to live in South Minneapolis on 26th and Harriet, I paid $450 in the 80s. That same unit right now is $1,200. So let's take away $1,200. Well, let's clear that. Let's go $1,200 a month times 12.
You're talking about $14,000 in rent,
yeah.
Right? $14,000 in rent for a year, right?
Yep. Take away 27, 1, 2, 3. You have $12,000 left, okay? That's not even including taxes. So from that $12,600, let's take away the $7,000, $7,500 in taxes.
Okay.
Take away 7,000. Just round.
Well, you're already down to around 8,400, 500.
You're down to $5,000. Now let's just take out the.
Now
tax.
You haven't eaten yet, right? You haven't eaten yet.
Yeah, we haven't eaten. We ain't bought a lick of nothing.
Yeah.
Okay. Say your budget with the $5,000 left. Your budget a month for grocery shopping is $500 a month. That's modest.
Okay.
Or conservative. Mm-hmm. That's $6,000 for the year. You're already $1,000 in the hole because all you have left is $5,000. You need a side gig.
Well,
okay,
you think the bank would loan you something? You think we could?
Oh no,
get
The banks aren't giving up squat. They're not giving up nothing to you. I don't care. You're working that. That's living in poverty. That's
okay,
just one
so then you got so you've got to find a second job, right? You got
to
find a second job.
You got to find a second
part-time
and third job or go to college and get a degree and get a job, okay, because you're not going to –
Okay.
No, okay. The city council, Mr. Edwards, as far as I'm concerned, and I think a lot of people are concerned, that $15 an hour minimum wage is nuts. And I don't know who's pushing this, but you can't say – they're holding up signs, $15 for families. Okay, what
right.
families? Okay,
now
that
I have
that?
To say that probably could work if you were paying them $15 in America, in places like Bangladesh or India or Indonesia or Kenya, or the Congo or Peru or Ecuador or even in Mexico right across Rio Grande. Yeah.
So what are they saying? If there's a company in Minneapolis that pays people in Mexico for production less than $15 an hour, are they going to have to pay them $15 an hour now? Hell no. No, not at all. But what's going to happen
well,
is...
Well, they'll pay them $15 an hour, Mr. Allen, in pesos, but not in American dollars. But you will pay for the product in American dollars. Oops.
Oh, yeah. Because if you go to Mazatlan, Mexico, you turn in a $100 bill, they give you 300 pesos. It's still $100. Still spends the same. It's just more stuff you got to carry around.
Yeah. In other words,
it's
three on the dollar or three on the cent or however they want to do it. Yeah. Do we have any calls? So, you know, just in case anybody's trying to get through, want to question us on the story that was actually broken last night at a mayoral meeting here in the city of Minneapolis at the Urban League of Minneapolis by a candidate by the name of Alfred Flowers, who ran 4 years ago and did pretty doggone well. So there's nothing. By the way, have we made absolutely sure on the challenge that was given to us that there was nothing in this morning's Minneapolis Star Tribune on the mayoral debate of last night?
I am looking right now. I'm going to the politics, local home sports, Minneapolis. Let's just go to Minneapolis and see what they're saying there. I already went there once. I'm just trying to be funny. But, yeah, there's the biggest story there in Minneapolis is coming up right now is the top North Minneapolis lieutenant is appointed for fourth precinct. Aaron Beard.
Beard is the new commander of the fourth precinct. I imagine a lot of folks are happy with that. The chief made a decision not to appoint John DeMonaco, who still stays as what is called mid-watch commander. So, in other words, he's there when the station is looking at nightfall, when things really begin to happen. As we said before, civilian patrols are now on the streets, if you will, but with no more than seven or eight individuals, maybe. And they were in St. Paul last night. But yes, Aaron Beard, lieutenant, now inspector of the 4th Precinct. So I don't know what that means. He is a former SWAT team member too. So that means he's got a pretty aggressive philosophy on how to deal with the problems on the street. And we do have a lot of tensions. We have not talked a lot in the community about a near riot in front of the 4th Precinct last week. By the way, Black Reporter, only one they really have, reported on that last week, a confrontation in which firecrackers and explosive little bombs and things were thrown. Yeah. And so a lot of tension on the street behind that here in our city.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just looking here, Mr. Edwards. I don't see anything. It's so sad that, you know, these people. I mean, you know, I'm just at the point with about 10 minutes left here. I'm just at the point, Mr. Edwards, that, you know, you don't want to give up, but you just say, you know, we're having circular conversations. You know, there's nothing
getting
done.
Yeah, circular
there's
correct,
no one,
isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, and so, I mean, we have all these meetings. I stopped doing the community meetings years ago. It just didn't do any good because, you know, you have tornado money and they give it to a few people and it never reaches the community. They have this going on, that going on, and if you're not part of a particular clique, party, political or otherwise, or you're not a friend of a friend of a friend, I don't care what you're doing. You're not going to get anything. And so,
but there's so
out
much,
there
Mr. Allen. You've given the figures before. There's just so much nonprofit money out here. I mean, you know, I'm hearing leaders indicating they're going to take the Peace Summit doctrine across the country, kind of like a traveling carnival and stuff like that. And I'm hearing statistics and figures. By the way, they're really planning for a significant financial profit as it pertains to the Super Bowl, which will be here next February in our beloved city. That's if the People's Stadium doesn't fall apart. You know, the panels keep falling off the walls and the bathrooms keep flooding and water's running down the inside of the the walls in the women's bathroom and such things. But I'm told that we as African Americans should know that's none of our business because we really didn't have anything to do with building it, did we, Mr. Allen?
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
You're absolutely
yeah.
right.
Yeah. So what else do we have? You know, leadership is basically indicating everything is all right. By the way, have you seen any Black employees? I know you come through the north side enough. Have you seen any Black employees in that big building that's going to be built across from the Urban League there on Penn and Plymouth?
You know what? I haven't seen any, and a friend of the show's, Lenny Chisholm, said that he drives by there every day because he lives over in that area, and he has yet to see one Black employee carrying a bucket, a wheelbarrow, sweeping up shining shoes or anything.
Well, I have to say that I have seen one. In fact, I was asked to remove myself from close proximity to their property because I was looking down in that hole. Because they're now two stories down, boy, they're having a hard time, finding solid ground. And that's not a good sign. And, in fact, I'm kind of concerned for a couple houses that are right next to it on the south side, if you will, of what would be the building. But I did see one African-American, and, in fact, I stopped him and asked him. I think that's what upset the white foreman. I asked him how long he had been working for the company. Brother said he'd been working for 10 years for the company. I said, okay. We did see one cat holding a stop sign. That may have been the same guy. But I just haven't seen a great number. And also they're working on the expansion of the Nordic Ski facility there. They basically are getting ready to part three. And I asked a question yesterday of some Black golfers who are friends of mine. You know, I like the game and play it. And they said they can't remember seeing any African-Americans working on that, and yet I talked to some representatives of the Minneapolis Park Board, and they were talking about the large number of African-Americans that were going to be employed in building the new facility for Nordic skiing and et cetera. But I keep hearing this, but I'm trying to figure out at what point, at what point we will see these black folks. I'm not understanding. You know,
I
just don't see it. I'm downtown. I make it a point to go downtown, park, walk into downtown. I look at all the construction that started even last summer. I would appreciate, you know, those that are, you know, maintain that we're running our miles and fat miles and et cetera. I sort of wish that they would send you, Mr. Allen, or myself, pictures of all these African-Americans working on all these projects, and particularly send me pictures of African-Americans working on our federally funded highways. Oops. Remember our good friend Louis King? Dr. King said a long time ago. Yeah, that he had put together the master plan, and that African Americans would always have employment on the federal highway system. And, you know, I've been looking all across. I know there are a lot of detours. I know that. And I know I see a lot of Caucasians working, making money, $20, $25, $30 an hour or more. But I just don't, you know, the closest I see to diversity are white women who are basically holding up stop signs, making $25 an hour.
True.
I mean,
they're making what?
I'm
prevailing
just trying
wages.
To figure
they're
out where the
almost
Negroes
$40 an hour. They're making prevailing wages out there. They're making $40-something an hour, holding the stop sign, smiling at you.
It's
crazy.
So, anyways, how much time we got left, Mr. Allen? We're coming up
on 3:14.
Oh, okay. Well, we want to challenge our audience. Some did not think that the phone lines would be open tonight. We'll try to have Mr. Allen back next week, open those phone lines up, because I'm interested in folks telling us how well things are going, how great things are going, if you will, all of the master plans that are in play, particularly to put our young people to work, because, you know, I'm just not seeing a lot of young African-Americans, and I'm not being redundant because we have so many different categories. I'm just not seeing young African-Americans out here on the job, brother. You know what I'm saying? You know, and everything is being done. Sidewalks are being repaired. Streets are being repaired. You know, freeways are being repaired. Great edifices are being built and et cetera. And I just don't see the sons and daughters of the African. But, again, here's my challenge. I can't speak for Mr. Allen, though we're a co-host of this program. I'd like for someone to send us pictures, and not stage pictures like, you know, they do down at Summit, but send us pictures of African-Americans working on all these major sites, downtown, in and around the Twin Cities and places like that. And I'd sure like to see that, because obviously we must have a lot of African-Americans that are working and drawing significant salaries, right?
Yeah, I would guess
it's got to
so.
Be. Yeah. Because I believe everything that my leaders tell me.
Blindly.
If they told me there were three moons and two suns, I mean, I'd believe that, man, because, you know, they would have no reason to stretch the truth, right?
Mm-hmm. No, they've not done. No reason at all, Materials. No reason at all. No, they'd always tell us the truth.
Yeah.
So,
and we're getting ready for the Super Bowl, you know what I mean? And I'm hearing people already saying there's going to be great economic opportunity for African Americans. I've asked the question, can they give us a categorical breakdown so we'll know how, you know, African Americans will be working all these different jobs at the hotel. By the way, do we yet have a 2-star African American hotel, Mr. Allen, here in the Twin Cities?
No, not that I know. Nowhere.
Oh, that's right. We don't even have a 1-star, do we?
We barely have restaurants, so yeah. Barely.
Ooh. And I keep hearing folks talking about spending big money at the big white club. There's a seafood place right there on the Nicollet Mall. They tell me there's a particular sister who picked up about $50,000 for doing a survey about employment of African Americans. Star Tribune wouldn't write about that story either. That's when our good friend Dr. King, Louis King, picked up allegedly $150,000 to monitor the Negro problem downtown. And then gave most of it back for whatever reason. But anyways, the sister just had another activity at one of the white clubs downtown. Had a food bill of about $1,800.
I wasn't on job.
I'm sorry about that.
All right, Mr. Allen, take us on home, baby.
No,
take us home.
Yeah. That we're out of time. We're actually off the air right
all
now.
All right,
so.
We're gone.
Okay.
Normally she comes on and tells us we're out of time.
Yep.
All right, Mr. Allen, hope to have you back next week. Take care. All right.
Bye-bye.